It's very nice to meet you, Angelique.
It's kind of funny because you're the first person I've met in Britain that pronounced my name properly. Normally they just call me Angelique.
Well, that comes from 7 years at Spennymoor Grammar School when I was young, learning French from a man called Mr. Forson, who was a brilliant French teacher. And from being 11, he would not speak English when he came into the classroom for 7 years. Everything was negotiated in French. He was a very gifted teacher. So I absolutely loved France, as you know, and I read a lot of French poetry and literature when I was going up into the sixth form. And I loved it, but I never went to France because, you know, being from a working class family, you know, there's not money to do trips, especially mm-hmm. in the 1960s, 50s. And so I never went to France to hear ordinary French people yes. speaking. So that was a great sadness. But anyway, I did get to France when I was in my early 30s.
Was it in Languedoc? Is that where you went?
No, I didn't get to Languedoc for 10 years.
Oh, right.
You know, that was in Paris, it's an international education conference, because by that time I was lecturing in education, and I took a group of students there, and that was wonderful, because it was in Sèvres, and then an international centre. And the French speakers, of course, were very formal, very good, clear French. I could understand that, you see. They've all been to the École Normale and so on. And I loved it, felt at home. So I loved that. I loved hearing French in the cafes and things like that. And occasionally tried it, but I'm a much better reader of French than I am a speaker of French. But anyways, continue to read Paris Match and, you know, be a Francophile in the head, as it were. And then about 15 years ago, maybe a bit more, Brian and I started to travel in France, go to Normandy, Brittany, you know, along the coast and so on, and absolutely loved it. And maybe 10 years ago, we started going much further south, because my daughter and her husband, who we travel with, we got down to the Languedoc, and we stayed in a profounder house, because we like to rent a house right in the middle of a town, called the Maison d'Estella, and it's right in the middle of Agde, and it was all broken up now into different dwellings. But originally, it had been a 13th century house. Now, I love that feeling.
Of history.
History. Ruthie, you see, is a little scrap of me in those early days. And also, Ruthie emerges out of the Bishophook. Maybe you wouldn't know it, but the landscape she emerges out of is Bishop Auckland, and that she comes from there. And she has this northern accent that we all have, which I rather like.
You don't have any accent at all, actually. You don't sound like you're from up here.
I can do that. I'm interested in writers, as you know. And this book was very good, interesting for me, because I've worked with writers and taught writers for 20 years. I've written for 20 years. And I do a lot of mentoring and so on of writers. And I believe everybody can write. Mm-hmm. I want everybody to write stories as well. That's me. But also in working with writers, both not just locally but nationally and internationally, I'm fascinated what happens when writers get together, because they're all dynamic, strange people. And what happens in writing the Maison d'Estella with that range of people, which I'm going to talk about tonight, is not unlike what has happened to me in Ireland, in Greece, in America, where writers are very hyper-conscious in a way, even amateur or writers or new writers. And the kind of emotional temperature goes right up, you know. And I've always found that, and I found that interesting. And I always knew one day I would write something about a writer's retreat, which included that dynamic of how writers interact. My daughter once, I was at a meeting in London, and we were all writers with my daughter. And if you look across a sea of lawyers, they all kind of look alike.
Yes.
But if you look across a sea of writers, they're all very different. They physically look different. They socially and culturally look different. The only thing they have in common is they write. And that's what the people at the Maison d'Estella are. Like, you've got Joe, who's fantastic, and you've got a Francine, who is fantastic in her own way. You've got the funny old Abby and Felix, who have their dark side, as you know. And they're all different. Some people are pretend writers. I've met that before, like Abby saying, oh, we'll go there, we'll pretend to be writers, and so on. So I always wanted to do that, and I just needed a kind of way to do it. And somehow, about 2 years ago, you know, in writing, it just comes, that's what I'll do, I'm going to do that. And my feature in the novel, as you would notice, is to try, well, Ruthie, who runs the Maison d'Estelle.
Maison Bleu, you mean? You keep talking about
it. Oh, yes.
You keep saying Maison d'Estelle. Yeah, that's the first part. Similar.
Yeah. In a way, the house is based on three or four houses that I've spent lots
right.
of time
so that in. Might be a bit of the Maison Bleu then.
Yeah, that's right. It might, yeah, certainly. And the feeling of it is right. And so all of that has kind of come together. And I've invented the Maison. I was going to say d'Estelle.
I know.
Maison Bleu. I've invented Maison Bleu in order to sort of encompass these ideas about these writers over a week. And Ruthie, I suppose a bit like me, because has this idea. When you do a writing group, what you like to do is to get people to read their writing.
Okay.
And that's how it's shared. And often it's a problem for some writers.
It's so meant to be quite private, isn't it?
Yeah.
When if you want to be published, it's a bit...
Yeah, it's personal, really. And some people get you... It's quite good to read around, as they say, because that's how you get to be responsible for what you've written to the hearer or the reader. But Ruthie has this idea, which I've used in workshops before, of the writers who are writing all the time, putting their writing on the salon table so that other people can read it in private. So it enhances the privacy, and I quite like that. And I think Ruthie actually made a success of it. In writing this book, what I did was present all these writers through their writing. So you would see in the book that Francine is writing her own backstory, which is the spine of the book, I think. I love European history. I love World War II. I've written in World War II. I read this piece of factual literature about how the resistance used children to carry messages. And often the teachers, who were often left-wing and in the resistance, recruited children. So Madame Griche in the story is her teacher. And so somehow ideas come to you and they kind of roll together and make something. And
I think you explained that a bit to the... to the reader with Joe's story.
Yes.
He's kind of learning how to write, isn't
he? That's right. He's the learner. And he does lists. You would see the lists. And occasionally I put them on my blog, some of these bits. And several people have written to me about how Joe's lists are fantastic. You know, I'm going to talk about them tonight. And that's one way to start writing without thinking you're writing. And Joe's writing shows his talent, his observation, his kind of demotic grasp of language.
It's very raw, isn't it?
Exactly. And without that raw writing, you don't get a good writer. If you get a writer who's very sophisticated and is copying the English literature thing, they're not themselves, but he will emerge as Kit sees that. All my books are pure fiction, but without the kind of factual experience, and my love of France, actually, that book couldn't be right. And I think that loving France like I do, I'm also writing from the outside. So I'm not pretending I'm French to write a book set in France. But it allows me to get into that mindset where so many British people and Irish people live in France because they love it.